Timothy tells us that KBOO is keeping him sane. Well, we do that for all our listeners. We are sane in a crazy world, and we have to stick together and help each other stay sane, stay knowledgeable, keep us aware and alert to what the corporate machinations are going on about us, and that is the way to survive in this world. 877-500-5266. We keep each other sane. We keep each other knowledgeable. We keep each other aware. We keep each other in solidarity with each other. That is what KBOO is all about. It is us against the corporate world.
We also have Amy Goodman's book, which we are offering to anyone calling in. This is an additional to everything else that we've said. You can have a copy of The Silenced Majority. We have a box full of those books, and you can have one just by asking for it. The Silenced Majority by Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan. And that's a great book for backing up all those Democracy Now! Broadcasts that you've listened to. But The Good Mood Kitchen is a wonderful book. We have the hardback cover. As I said, it's got the stain-resistant cover, and you'll be glad to have that in your kitchen. Call us right now, 877-500-5266.
Or come on down and see us at 20 Southeast 8th. Person just did that about half an hour ago.
That's right.
Yes.
Thanks for calling and thanks for coming.
He came down with a little money and we showed him around. He took a look around the our lavish corporate headquarters here to see where his money's going, you know, and meet the folks. And I don't know if he stuck around for a cup of coffee, but we always have a pot of coffee going someplace. And we have, little items to eat to put you in a good mood. And so come on down and see us. That's 20 Southeast 8th, a little building with a nice mural in front. Yeah. Or if you go online. If it's still too early to meet people, you can go online, kboo.fm. And that's the way you can do it.
This is a guerrilla operation, and just as you said that, joking that we don't spend much money, I was looking at the particle board that I can see through the arm of the chair that you're sitting on.
Well.
But, it still works, so we're not going to replace it. We're going to spend your money on making people's radio. We need to spend it on staff. Staff have to be paid, and we don't pay our staff particularly well, but we do pay them, and we've got to pay full price for that electricity that's pumping out at 25,000 watts from the main transmitter up there on the West Hills and from other transmitters elsewhere in Cascadia. You can be a part of that. 877-500-5266. You'll feel good when you do. You'll understand once you've done it. You'll understand when you hear KBOO, you'll think to yourself, that's part of me.
Don't forget the phone calls. We have a phone bill because we talk to people all around the world who bring you knowledge, who bring you all kinds of good information. So 877-500-5266.
Once again, that number 877.
Oops, something going on.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices, Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO-FM, the Pacifica Network, and online at madnessradio.net. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Phil Borges. Phil is a photographer and filmmaker who, over the past 30 years, has done human rights work with indigenous communities around the world. He has hosted TV programs for the Discovery Channel and National Geographic, has produced 6 award-winning books, and his TED Talk on spirituality and psychosis has more than 1.2 million views. Phil is the producer and director of the new documentary film, Crazy Wise, Rethinking Madness, Psychosis, and Spirituality. So welcome to Madness Radio, Phil Borges.
Hi, Will. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. And just for full disclosure, I'm actually one of the guests in who's interviewed in Crazy Wise, and it was really an honor to be part of this project. A wonderful, wonderful film that I really recommend people check out and get a chance to see whenever they can. And it's a focus on one of the things that I think is most important in understanding what we call psychosis or madness or mental illness, which is that there might be some kind of gift or something positive in the experience. This is a very deep mystery about madness. And so it's great to have a documentary that focuses on this. Do you want to say a little bit about what gave you the idea to create the Crazy Wise film and how it kind of came into being?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I've always said that Crazy Wise came to me. I did not think about doing a film on mental health. I would have been completely surprised if somebody told me 5-6 years ago that I would be doing a film on mental health. But it came really through my work in these indigenous and tribal communities. And as you said in the introduction, I've been doing these human rights stories for Amnesty International, UN, various NGOs over the past 30 years. And by chance, I would meet the healers and visionaries in these communities. And after a while, I started seeking them out and interviewing them.
And what communities are we talking about? Is this primarily in Asia, or is this also Latin America, or where was it that you have traveled?
It's been all over, really. Africa, Asia, North America, South America, the Arctic Circle, the Far East. I haven't even counted them, but so many indigenous and tribal cultures in these parts of the world. And so it's been very extensive.
So you got interested in interviewing the healers and the shamans. And what were some of the things that you learned? Because I know that different communities have very particular approaches and different rituals and different myths and different cultures, but there's some very interesting commonalities between these different experiences. Tell us some of the things that you found or some of the people that you met, or give us a sense of what it is that you learned in some of these interviews.
Yeah, well, there's so much. I mean, first of all, most of them go into altered states and trance-like states to do their work. And the way they induce those states is different from culture to culture. Many, many cultures use the drum and a drum beat to put themselves in that state. In the Amazon, they use psychoactive plants like ayahuasca or daktura. In Pakistan, for instance, in the Kalash community, this is a community that's right on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan, an animistic community, and they actually burn juniper branches, slaughter an animal, pour the blood of the animal over the branches, and inhale the smoke to go into trance. So the trance induction seems to differ in different indigenous communities, but I can almost say 100% of the communities I've been in has somebody that plays this role.
And so, and historically, we know that this has always been at the heart of the earliest human culture and in indigenous cultures around the world, this idea that altered states, going out of losing touch with reality, because that's basically what an altered state is, actually is a source of wisdom and healing and teaching. And so it's just compelling that we find this all over the world. And give us an example of someone that you interviewed or someone that you talked to and some of the things that they told you.
Yeah, well, it started really. I was doing a project in Tibet on the Tibetan issue, and I was actually in India where the Dalai Lama lives, and I was invited to watch the Oracle of Tibet, the protector spirit of Tibet, be channeled by a young monk known as a Khutan. And a Khutan is someone who has that ability to go into these states and tune into other dimensions. And I was invited to watch him go into a trance-like state and talk in a very strange voice. And the monks gathered around him and started writing down everything he was saying. He was put into that trance by the drumming of the monks and the chanting of the monks. And once he was in that state, he, as I said, he started talking in this very strange voice. And then he totally collapsed, and he had to be carried out of the room. And I was really sitting there wondering what was going on in terms of, was this some sort of a performance, a ritualistic performance, or what had happened? And 2 days after I saw that, I was invited, along with a friend of mine, Mick Brown, who writes for the Daily Telegraph in London, to go in and interview the Kooten. And, you know, I was kind of expecting this kind of a showman, you know, somebody that's used to performing. And it was a very humble, quiet guy. He was 30 years old at the time. And he talked about what happened to him was he started having personality changes. He was hearing voices.
Before he became identified as the Oracle?
Yeah, before he became identified. And he started what he described as personality changes. He had mood swings. He had urgings to do these inappropriate things, like jump up on stage when the Dalai Lama was speaking. And he was very worried about it. He, at one point, thought he might be dying. He was hearing voices, having these intense dreams. And the older monks, as he was telling them about what was going on, started looking at him as if he might be a Kooten and started training him. And, you know, I really am sad that I never did get into what that training was exactly. But it went on for quite some time. They sent him to the Dalai Lama for an interview, and the Dalai Lama asked him if he really wanted to be a Kooten, because evidently they don't sometimes live as long as the other people. And he said yes, he wanted to dedicate himself. And now he is the main Kooten who channels the state oracle, which is the protector spirit of the Tibetan people. And I met him while I was doing the film again 20 years later. He's 53 years old now, down in L.A. when he was setting up a Nechung monastery in L.A., and he's happy and healthy and joking, and, you know, he's like the Dalai Lama. But so that's how he was selected. The other thing that was interesting, he didn't remember a thing he said when he was in that state. It's like he lost himself and tuned into another source of selfhood in a way, and became this other entity.
So what you're describing, you know, from a Western psychiatric standpoint would be classic symptoms of psychosis. And then actually it's also a sort of at the same time, the sort of classic story of the shamanic initiation.
Yeah, yeah. And that initiation is sometimes getting the person to learn to manage their sensitivity. They look at these sensitivities as a potential plus for the community that can be used, but they have to be learned to be managed and taken control of in some way. And then just learning how to go into that trance and then come back from it.
Potentially, you know, it sounds like he was really frightened and overwhelmed by what he was going through. And then the community says, well, okay, hey, this is a way of making meaning. This is a way of sort of understanding what you're going through, and then we're going to help you. What doesn't happen, it sounds like, he's not told that, okay, this is a dangerous thing that's purely negative. We have to get rid of it, or we have to even recover from it. But actually, these are kind of skills, or it's a capacity or a kind of a gift that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you very articulately laid down the whole thesis of Crazy Wise.
Is that known throughout Tibet, that these are potentially gifts, or that these are potentially a positive thing when someone has these experiences?
It's accepted in many of the cultures I've been in, most of the cultures I've been in, that hearing voices, having visions, are a positive thing. It's you're getting information that can be valuable to you. And I think it seems to me that in our culture, where especially it's getting better now with the Hearing Voices movement, but in the past, hearing voices was an automatic, you know, you have a potential schizophrenia on the horizon. You were given a message that could be very frightening. And just having that frightening message given to you can change those voices into hostile voices or voices telling you to do dangerous or inappropriate things. So I think the state of mind of the person hearing the voices has a lot to do with what those voices are and how they behave.
And at the same time, I'm sure that there also are people who have just terrifying voices experiences and do have trauma-related struggles with visionary states that may not be positive. And was there anything that you found in your travels and your interviews that also looked at kind of the darker side of these experiences that maybe don't get channeled in a positive direction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've talked to many people with lived experience and all the shaman I interviewed, most of them, they were terrified at points in their when it was initially coming upon them before they were identified. And so many thought they were dying. And part of the shamanic initiation is actually a death. It's a death of the old self and a rebirth of a new self. And the sense I got was, number one, they were asked to face their fears and not run from their fears and be with their fears. And the other thing that was really interesting, they got a peer, usually an older shaman who him or herself had been through one of these episodes and navigated it successfully.
Again, we see a very instructive parallel with what could happen in the U.S. or other countries, that people who've been through it are the ones who then can turn around and teach and guide and help others, rather than someone who's just gone off and studied it under a microscope and looked at it in textbooks. I mean, this is related to the idea of the wounded healer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I found it very interesting that so many of them, you know, if they were goat herders, they're still a goat herder. They also now have this other job of being a healer or a visionary.
Phil, one of the things that seems to also be true about shamanism around the world is there is this kind of performance quality, that part of the ritual is the creation of a certain atmosphere and a certain belief, because that's what's mobilized is the belief system. And is that something that you encountered and saw? What are your thoughts about kind of the question of the sort of magician sleight of hand side to shamanism?
Right. You know, I haven't witnessed that in person, but certainly I've heard about it, especially in the Philippines. And I know there is a lot of placebo effect in the healing process. In our healing process here in the West, we have a lot of placebo effect, which is just the belief that something is being done to help you will actually help you get better. That is a very powerful force, and it's a force that needs to be thought of and reckoned with. And that is what one of the big messages is in this film, is the paradigm by which we describe and define and treat quote-unquote mental illness has a very negative placebo effect. If you're telling somebody, and most of these psychotic breaks, quote unquote, happen to people under 24 years of age. Half of them happen to people in their adolescence. And if you tell somebody that's young and has left consensus reality for whatever reason, that they have a disease of their brain or a chemical imbalance that can't be cured, that causes a lot of fear, has a very negative placebo effect. And if you take on top of that and give them a diagnostic label that is stigmatized, it shames them and isolates them. And fear and isolation together will disempower the person. And it's one of the worst things you could do for mental health. So, yes, the shaman does use placebo, but they use it wisely. They use it consciously to help the person get well.
And when did you decide to make Crazy Wise? How did you come to the inspiration to make this documentary film about shamanism and psychosis?
It was about 5 years ago, a neighbor of mine who came over to visit me one evening, and she brought her daughter, and I had done an interview with her daughter. Her daughter was an aspiring photographer going to NYU. So after dinner, Deborah asked me if she would love to do a film with me sometime. And we decided, well, maybe let's do a little film on meditation. So I said, okay, when I'm back in town, if you start lining up people who meditate, we can make a little short. And one of the people she sent me was Adam, who became the main subject in our film. And he had a history of a psychotic break when he was 20, put on meds for 4 years, where he had very serious side effects from these medications. At one point, he was taking 15 pills a day. And the reason she selected him is he was a meditator. And his story was he had cut off his meds. And I want to repeat, he had just gone cold turkey on his meds. But that's, as you know, Will, that's
not
a very
dangerous, advisable.
Not advisable at all. There's heavy withdrawal issues around medications. But he went off them all at once and did a very severe meditation retreat called a Vipassana, which is 10 days of silent meditation, 10 hours a day. And he came out of that somewhat stabilized. So when I met him, he was working. He seemed like a normal, you know, 26-year-old at that point. And I thought, well, this would be kind of an interesting story to tell. Let's, instead of interviewing a whole series of people, let's just follow him for a while. And 4 months into following him, he went back to do another Vipassana meditation retreat, and childhood memories started coming up as they were before, but this time it was much more severe. He was having a lot of problems with it, and he went to the leaders of the retreat and told them about it, and they didn't know how to handle it. They weren't prepared to handle that type of thing, and they suggested he go home. And so he went home from that. Evidently, the images that came up in his mind had to do with the molestation that happened when he was very young. And he told his parents about it. They didn't believe him. And so we watched him. He was alienated from the thing that really was helping him, the meditation retreats, and his family at the same time. But being alienated, the point I wanted to make, being alienated from both that retreat and his family had devastating consequences for him. We watched him fall apart literally within weeks after that.
So that was a real turning point. And then the story in the film is really about how Adam doesn't get the kinds of support that he really needed to get. And then what might we do as a society to rethink what we call mental illness, so we do give people support that they need.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one of the big messages in our film, along with we need a shift in the paradigm, is we need to start building communities that understand and can support people that go into these extreme states. Because really, they're just extreme states of what we all go through. We all get depressed. We all get anxiety. I mean, it's a human condition. And yes, sometimes it can get to the level where it gets so extreme that dangerous things start to happen.
Phil Borges, thank you so much for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thank you, Will. Hope to see you soon.
You've been listening to an interview with Phil Borges. He is a photographer and filmmaker who, for the past 30 years, has worked for human rights in indigenous communities around the world. He has hosted TV programs for the Discovery Channel and National Geographic, and has produced 6 award-winning books, and his TED Talk on spirituality and psychosis has more than 1.2 million views. Phil is the producer and director of the new documentary film, Crazy Wise, Rethinking Madness, Psychosis, and Spirituality. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Madness Radio is sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices. Host is Will Hall and producer is Nina Packabush. Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO-FM and the Pacifica Network, and shows are archived online at madnessradio.net.
KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm here with...
Hair.
And we are here, do we have a beanie for you? You can get a beanie, you can get a K-Boo beanie, you can get a K-Boo knit cap, in other words, or as Pear calls it, a watch cap, by calling us right now at 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266, and I agree, this is about keeping your sanity in
the
world.
And when you get your head... straightened out, put that watch cap on to keep it warm.
That's right. First we shrink it down, then we keep it warm.
That's right.
877-500-5266 is the number to call. Now, you know it's got to be you, because you understand the effect that this radio broadcasting has on this society, not just the public affairs, but the music too. It's that thing that you can turn to. It's become so important in the digital age, as we find with the various algorithms and exclusions and little tricks that the internet pulls, that we're not getting curated music anymore. We're not getting anyone else's desires but our own, which are very, very carefully calibrated by algorithms and then fed back to us in a continuous loop. This is, you can break that with KBOO, not just with the public affairs, but with music. And that's the value of having a broadcast outlet that is also on the internet. And so you understand that this is an effort that we are all doing, all of us volunteers and all of us members together are putting this together, and we're making it happen and have been doing so for 49 years. Well, it's time for you to join the thousands who have decided that it's worth a little bit of their money and a little bit of their time to call. And so I'm asking, would you be willing just to spend 3 minutes on the phone and call us and set up a donation and get yourself a knit cap? 877-500-5266. How about $10 a month? 877-500-5266.
And your money, part of your money is going to pay for a wonderful record library, which is kind of bulging at the seams because there's so much different kinds of music on KBOO that we just hard to find a place to keep it all. We have everything from Afropop to Zydeco and everything in between. And our DJs, our music people, they have their own, they bring their own music with them, because they travel around, they go to Europe and other countries, and they get CDs that you can't even get in this country. And so, you know, it's not like some corporate radio where the music is all piped in from New Jersey or someplace. This is music that our music people have collected themselves, music that they love, music that you will love. That's why KBOO is the best in music and the best in news and public affairs.
Man, that library is something. It twists and turns, and I've heard tell that if you go far enough back, you actually go into time itself and can emerge in the Alexandria, at the library at Alexandria. I don't know if that's actually true, but it gives you some idea of the archives that we have. And we're here for you, and this is an accumulation that has been brought together by the hearts and minds of people who give a damn about the society and about radio. Be a part of that. Call us 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO. That's got to be you. Are you willing to do it? Are you willing to make that little effort that we need every month and join the thousands who already do? 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266, and we've got a prize drawing for you as well.
That's right, yes. Today's drawing is for a $250 gift certificate to Portland U Brew and Pub. And this covers a beer-making experience for up to 7 people. You and 6 of your buddies can come on down and help make some, brew up a batch of brew. And that's what the call 877-500-5266 to be entered, like somebody's just doing right now. And I want to thank Jim, who is renewing from La Center, Washington. He is in line for that. He's got his name in there in for that drawing. He may win that beer-making experience for seven people. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. If you can make your own beer, you can make your own news. You can make your own look at the world. You don't have to depend on the corporate media to kind of mediate between you and the world. We can look at the world directly. We are part of the world. The world is us. KBOO is in this world.
Just think of the swag that you could get. I mean, just for a moment, just from one call, you could get the Nip Cap for $10 a month, but we'll throw in a copy of The Silenced Majority by Dennis Moynihan and Amy Goodman. Mm-hmm. So you'd have that book and the cap, and then you'd enter the prize drawing, which you might win. And, you know, if it was me, I would, like, game it a bit and, you know, bring three people so I get more beer, right? But all that could be yours at 877-500-5266. Are you willing to make that little bit of effort for a better society for KBOO?
Of course, of course. Do it now. 877-500-5266. Our people here will answer your call and put you on the road to wealth and happiness and knowledge through KBOO, your radio station.
KBOO Portland. KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Boki Bowl, located 1028 Southeast Water Avenue in Portland, and serving ramen in an industrial space with counter service and communal seating. Dinner was provided by Dean Nicholas, located 3520 Southeast Powell's Boulevard in Portland, and serving Italian food for over 40 years. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Home for the Holidays, a Habitat for Humanity and Metro East benefit concert on Saturday, December 9th at 1:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church in Portland.